Welcome to Fear the Boot bonus episode 23. Several weeks ago, we put out a call for you guys to send in your GM profiles explaining how you like to run games. And we got 7 entries that we are going to play for you. I'll be introducing them each as they come up. We have a couple prizes for whichever one of these GMs is selected as being the best by you, the listener. So right before and right after each of these GM profiles, I'll be sure to give you the name of who you're listening to. Be sure to make a note of who your favorite ones are, and we'll have a link in the show notes that you can follow to go over to the forums and vote. And we'll leave voting open for a week or two, after which we will select a winner and announce that on the subsequent show. I hope you enjoy hearing what our listeners have to say on the subject. And first up is Brian.
Hello, this is Brian Zylstra. I'd just like to thank Fear the Boot first. I didn't actually think I'd do one of these GM profiles, but I found an old microphone and figured, hey, Audacity's free, I might as well go for it. So, my GM profile. I'm about a 50-50 ratio in my game mastering versus playing, because when I'm a player, I tend to want to be a GM and create worlds. I think of everything I can do if I were a GM with the current campaign. And when I'm a GM, I think of all the things I could be doing if I were a player, and how much easier it would be if I was just playing. So, I go back and forth. I tend to GM a campaign and then hand it off to someone else after it's done, or whenever it dies out. And then I say, okay, I GM, someone else GM the next one. However, my games do have a few traits. I tend to be partial to mission-based games. At least, they start with a mission. I figure it's easier to get players together when they have a goal, and it's not an accidental meeting where they happen to be together at a tavern, and dragons burn down the whole town, and they're the only ones left alive, or something. It seems too contrived when it's accidental, whereas if you have a king that says, you have to go over there because you're my knights, it's a lot easier to have them go over there because they're the knights. And then after that, they can do whatever they want. Another aspect that my players have commented on is I have an intentional lack of ammo in my games. Not that there isn't much ammo, but that ammo is unlimited. I don't like dealing with it. I think it's annoying. So if you have a bow or if you have a gun, you have bullets or arrows. It just works. Also, if players can find a pet or a robot or anything to use as a pet, I let that go. That's something else they've commented on as well. Love for my players to come up with new ways to use pets or familiars. My favorite GM tool is a flowchart. I'm not note-heavy, but I come to every session with a flowchart that contains 3 separate choices and the various possibilities that I can think of. So that's how I plan out my gaming sessions. For instance, I had one where it had how they get into the town. There were several choices there. And then they were invited to dinner. And then if they followed a particular person after that. All 3 things did happen, not in the way that I thought of. I had intended them to be asked to dinner by someone else, but it ended up being the old crazy lady who ran the inn that didn't used to be there in the town, but had to be made because they were looking for an inn. And then what I do is I make notes on the flowchart, and I have a pretty good memory, so I go over it in my head when I'm driving home. Make mental notes on what to keep, what to get rid of, and how to direct the players. But overall, my games are pretty much just a giant sandbox. If they want to ignore the plot, I'm fine with that. Another plot will find them. So that's basically how I act as a GM. I allow the players to really go wild because that's what I like to do when I'm a player. I'm not a fan of railroading or any other sort of contrived way of controlling the players' actions. I guess outside of having a king tell them where to go at the beginning of the mission. Thanks, everyone.
That was Brian, and next up is Chris.
Hi, everyone. My name's Chris Engler, a.k.a. Captain Crunch, which I go by on the Fear the Boot message boards and pretty much every other message board out there. The nice way to sum up my GMing style is work smarter, not harder, but that may just be a nice way of saying that I'm a lazy GM. As like many of you, I'm in my 30s and work a 40-hour week. I don't have the time to do everything from scratch, but honestly, even when I did have the time, I didn't make lengthy campaigns all by myself. I consider myself a player of RPGs and not a game designer, so when it comes to running a game, most of the time I use a pre-created adventure as my launching point. That being said, I use that pre-generated adventure, as I said, as a launch point, not as a plot railroad. If I have one strength as a GM, it's being able to come up with stuff on the fly and remember enough of it later so that it doesn't feel like it was bolted on to an adventure as an afterthought. So if my players want to take a huge departure from a published adventure, I'm totally okay with that, since I didn't write the adventure and I don't have a ton of time invested in it. I don't get offended if people want to go running down a rabbit hole. I like to run games where it's okay to make jokes at the table at opportune times, but with equal opportunities for serious roleplay as well. I like running systems that are rules light, but not past the stick style story games, my current default system being Savage Worlds in one of its various settings. One thing that I'd like to try more of, that I have tried a few times, is running games over Skype using a virtual gaming tabletop like Fantasy Grounds. So if there's anyone out there that's interested in doing something like this, send me a message to Captain Crunch, that begins with a K, over on the Fear the Boot message boards. Thanks for listening.
That was Chris, and next up is Jeff.
I am Doom Squirrel on the message boards. My name is Jeff, and I live in Medford, Oregon. I don't really have a profile for GMing during a session, since that's really when the players are in control, but I do have a profile for game preparation. Some of my game preparation involves similar ideas to the GM profiles already explained on the show. I prepare as much as possible, and like Dan and Matt, I tend to aspire to the amount of notes Rob makes, but I'll often fall short or end up doing nothing. I prefer to have all the hard work done ahead of time so that running the game will be easier. I try to keep my games as fair as possible for everyone, which means I tend to adhere to the rulebooks as strictly as I can manage, although I'm not against agreeing on house rules. Before the first real session, I'll ask my players for descriptions of their characters' personalities and histories. Once those are finished, I'll collaborate with each player and develop the statistics for their characters, again, to keep the game fair. After the characters are made, I'll collaborate with the group to develop each character's connection. I tell my players to keep everything about their characters a secret unless they can explain it while in-game. This kind of metagame babysitting only tends to be necessary when there are players new to gaming, but I'd rather be safe than sorry. Then, like John, I try to determine their opposition, but instead of trying to think of everything the player's enemy would do, I just prepare what I think the group would try to interrupt. Like Chad, I try to anticipate likely paths the characters might choose and design encounters accordingly. Then, if necessary, I recycle unused designs. In my successful efforts, I've designed three paths for each choice. If their path doesn't adhere to any three, I'll try to improvise. This is one of the areas where I can end up wanting to write more than I'm actually willing to write. The approach I'm most interested in getting feedback for is what I do to design encounters or challenges. I take a look at all of the statistics for the characters, then I design the challenges to each use one thing or a combination of things the players have chosen. This is a basic concept I know was mentioned in at least one source book I own, but I like to think I take it to an extreme. In my last 3.5 D&D campaign, my players used every one of their feats, skills, spells, class abilities, race abilities, weapons, armor, magic items, omitting consumables, mundane items, allies, and languages. Using this method, players won't feel like anything about their character is wasted. For example, if a player buys an adamantine weapon, that tells me that they're going to have to destroy an unattended object with it or fight a golem. This grants some readily available inspiration, and good teamwork can result in some unexpected combinations of abilities. If your players catch on to the design, they may try to manipulate it somehow, and sometimes the players don't realize what trait you designed the challenge for them to use, although in this case, it's not uncommon for the challenge to be solved anyways without the intended trait. So, how do you guys like this approach? Do any of the hosts already do this? Another style I've tested, and have been wanting to try again, use almost all the methods already explained. It still keeps a strict adherence to the system's rules, but it doesn't allow the player's knowledge of any game rule information. Players may be familiar with the system, but the GM keeps all of their character statistics hidden and does all the rolling for everyone behind the GM screen. Using this will keep what the players know closer to what the characters know. They might just keep track of a list for possessions and spells. This shifts the focus from number crunching and detailed tactics to personality involvement and creative description. In addition to being a lot more work for the GM, it can be seen as taking away two enjoyable parts of the game from the players, the character design, and, let's all admit it, just rolling dice. How popular do you think this style is? Do you think the reduction in out-of-game character knowledge is worth what sacrifice?
That was Jeff, and next up is John.
Hey, Fear the Boot guys. This is John Stevens, coming to you from the hinterlands of southeast Missouri, around a little place called Bon Terre. I'm answering your call for listeners to talk about their GM styles. So here's mine. Preparation-wise, I follow what I guess you'd call the three-act play model. I like to outline my adventures in the form of three acts. Act one, where you introduce the story or the conflict to the characters, to the players. Act two, where you begin to reveal the antagonists and the things that they're doing. And then act three, where you present the opportunity for a climax to the story. Pretty standard stuff, pretty common model in literature. I like doing it that way because I'm not a big fan of games that tend to meander around. I don't like games where the game master will let one player take off on a tangent, something that he wants to do, and kind of leave everybody else sitting around wondering what's going on. I think it's pretty satisfying to have an end to your story. I think it's kind of it's great for when you want to run things episodically, like a TV show, which is usually how I do things. But what I want to say about that is that's a very structured way of doing things. And while I like doing it that way, I don't like the players to feel like they're being railroaded into a direction. So that sounds like a bit of a conflict. But the way I try to accomplish both those goals is to design the three acts of the story. And what I will do is I will set up some notes on some scenes that I think will happen. Really, my idea on this is that if you go to a horror movie, you know at some point in this story there's going to be some sort of climactic battle with the whatever the creature might be. You know that's going to happen. You know there's going to be scenes where there's going to be a struggle against it. You know there's going to be scenes where people find out things about the creature. All those sorts of things. You know those are going to happen. So I like to make little notes on how I think those things might unfold and which parts of the story or which acts of the story those will appear in. Now, once I do that, I set up plot points that will move the players from one act to the next. I make a good number of these. They might be a clue that turns up. They might be a conversation with an NPC, some information that's discovered. And I will present these in the game. I don't know which ones the players are going to pick up on, and neither do they. But this is where they get to set their own direction. We know they're going to get to the scene where they find out information about the creature. We know they're going to get to the scene where they finally fight it in the end, but we don't know how they're going to get there. They may take one of my plot points or one of my clues, or they may come up with ones that I hadn't thought of on their own. And if I pick one of those up during the game, we might run with it. So when I'm actually sitting down running the game, I like to try to read my players. I like to try to be sure that I'm recognizing when they're doing things that I can tell they think are really cool. And I like to try to expand on that. I like to try to engage everybody. I like to try to give everybody a role, something to do that's particular to them. And in general, just try to make sure everybody's having a good time. I like proactive players. I like to be reactive to them. And I like to try to work towards describing the setting and the NPCs to set a particular mood and suspend disbelief for a little while. So basically, I guess that's about it. That's my style in a nutshell. I try to design with structure in mind, and I try to run with letting the players mix it up. So that's it, and thanks for the opportunity to share. See you later.
That was John, and next up is Keith.
Hi, this is Keith Curtis, and I'm here to talk about my style of game mastering. Well, to begin with, I don't like to run short campaigns. I don't like to run one-shots or things that are only going to last a month. So I plan ahead, and I create a very detailed campaign document that will give me enough material, or at least the setting for enough material, to last several years. My typical campaign will last anywhere from 3 to 5 years.
And I'll do this with full input from the players. What would they like to do? What sorts of adventures are they looking for? Until we come up with a basic idea that we can work with. And then I'll just write and write and write. And I'll do maps and I'll do histories and I'll do character illustrations and NPC write-ups. Until I have a really detailed background from which I can paint a picture, or with the help of my players, of course. I will generally write a fiction piece to go along with it, because I know that not all of my players like to read dry campaign documents. Some do, some don't. But the fiction piece is generally written to explain the basic workings behind the world, how magic works or how technology works, depending on the genre. I will also write several fiction pieces for my eyes only, and these will generally be from the NPC points of view. They will detail key points in history as to how the world got to where it is or how the conflicts that the players will be involved in came to be. And by writing it in the form of fiction, it will give me the chance to look very carefully at things I might otherwise miss if I was just doing it as a straight timeline. I understand why NPC X is angry with NPC Y and will never forgive them, or why they will work for them with fanatical loyalty no matter what. And those sorts of things I hash out in a fiction form. Once that's all set up and we have player characters that are all worked out, I don't like to have the typical you all meet in a tavern and become friends, but I will have some sort of artificial threat or artificial situation which will force them to work together. And it might be you all get captured and you have to work together to escape, or you all are faced with the same threat at the same moment and have to work together to overcome it. And this gives them a chance to show off some of their skills. It gives them a chance to interact. And this, it's a cliche, but it's true that, friendships formed on the battlefield tend to be very strong, lifelong friendships. And so I will put them in a life-threatening situation or a situation that feels life-threatening, because you don't want to kill off characters on, day one. But once they have done that and we get into week-to-week play, what I'll generally do to come up with the adventure for that week is I will look back and see what they did last week, and I will project forward and say, okay, what are the logical consequences of their actions? What are the logical consequences of the NPC's actions? And try and cast that in a framework of my overall story, because I'll generally have an overall story or story arc that takes the characters forward at least 5 or 6 game sessions. I might not have an entire campaign idea, but at least I have an idea of the story as it stands. And I will write out next week's adventure as if I had complete control over the characters. This is what they would do. This is the things that will happen. And I'm not a railroader. I'm not going to tell them, no, you can't do that. But I know my players, and I know the sorts of choices they're likely to make. I've been gaming with these people for 20 or 30 years. I know the things they think are fun. And I will go through, I'll write up next week's adventure, and then I'll go back and look at it and say, okay, where are they most likely to possibly make other choices? And I'll create branch points, and I'll say, okay, if they decide to explore the caverns rather than follow the kidnappers, here's the things that they're likely to find. And I'll try to spend most of my creative energy on the things I think they're most likely to do. I'll also go back and I'll troubleshoot. Okay, where are their potentials where they could really go way off base? And how can I hide the railroad tracks? Or how can I make it so that the path of least resistance or the path of most fun is fairly obvious? And my players realize this, and they want to have fun, so they will generally choose the things that they think are most likely to go in that direction. Don't usually have a problem with that, but it does take an awful lot of time writing. I generally spend about 1.5 times the time writing that it takes to actually play the game. Beyond that, I use a lot of voices. I use a lot of props. I've made hand puppets. I've made entire models of ships for them to play in. I've used music, soundtracks, I've used sound effects, all kinds of little tricks with lighting to try and make an immersive experience for my players. And I've gone just a little bit over 5 minutes, so I'm going to sign off there and say that's my GMing style.
That was Keith, and next up is Nicholas.
I'm Nick Duffy Uhler on the Fear the Boot forums, and I'm posting my GMing style here. I'm guess I'd have to say I'm Chad-like GM in that we run a very low rule-centric game. A lot of RP in game. I try to keep my players in character as much as possible. And so sometimes that translates to ending up doing very little in the game itself one night. You spend 4 hours playing and there are 3 hours elapsed in the game world. Sometimes we run a much faster paced kind of streamlined combat system and streamlined skill checks where we just, you need diplomacy, roll this real fast. Know the target to beat and everything runs very quickly. The players are allowed to throw their own descriptions for just about anything that they would do or that they would, how they would interact with someone else in. And the more is better, I suppose. We just run right along as kind of quickly as possible, but at the same time we get all of the character interaction in. As every NPC they encounter, they interact with and has a name and has quirks and you can come back to, and there's consistency to all of that in the world. Combat's very streamlined. We run very quickly through which nobody gets bored. We go, 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 run everything along as fast as possible. I suppose that's it. We streamline as much as we can with the rules and keeping everyone in character and keeping anyone from getting bored as much as possible. Anyways, that's my GMing style, a little different, but works for my group and I, and there you go. So the gist of everything is that we just try to keep everybody in character all the time, and all the combat streamlined, and all the interactions as real and as consistent as possible. That's my basics of GMing. So thanks everybody for listening, and I'll catch you some other time.
That was Nicholas, and next up is Sam.
Hey guys, my name is Sam Telustis. My forum handle is Neosect, and this is my GM profile. I listened to the GM profiles you guys have done so far, and I kind of developed a little bit of an outline of how I'm going to do things here. I'm going to start with the questions you guys seem to ask of each other about your individual DM style, or GM style, rather. The first seems to be source of ideas. I've got two main sources. Either one, just kind of random crap that I come up with and glue together to make a great story, and the other is to just blatantly steal ideas. You know, the goal of gaming is to be entertaining, not necessarily to be original. The two most successful games that I can remember recently, one was a D&D 3.5 set in Eberron based on the video game Chrono Trigger, and the other was a Warhammer Fantasy roleplay set in the world of the anime Berserk. Both of those went over really well. The Warhammer game, some of the players had seen the anime before, they knew a little bit about the backstory, and all in all they said that they thought I stayed pretty true to the setting. The second, my major strength as a game master, I'd like to think that I can roll with punches pretty well. That if players will, you know, run off the rails, so to speak, and just go somewhere where I really hadn't planned, that I can either come up with something that will loop them around to where I need to be, or I think how Seamus said, just in the invisible rails. You know, the first rule of railroading is for the players not to see the rails. My biggest weakness is still scaling of a game, and this is making sure that the player characters are the right power level for the encounters they're running into. And this has been a problem in a couple games where the characters have either been so powerful they just dominate anything I can throw at them, or the converse is that they just get absolutely stomped by the monsters that I end up sending. Usually the big end battle tends to go one of these two ways. So that's something I'm working on. Systems I've run D&D 2nd, 3rd, 3.5, and getting ready to run a 4th edition game. I've run New World of Darkness once or twice, and like I said, the two games I ran recently were D&D 3.5 and the Warhammer game. I really like the campaign setting for Eberron. I think Keith Baker put a lot of really good material into this. That gives a variety of feels for a game, which kind of blends into the fifth point here. But I think if you want to do a lot of combat, if you want to do political intrigue, if you want to do exploration with not necessarily dungeon crawl, but, you know, uncovering ancient mysteries, I think there's a lot of potential in the Eberron setting. For the feel of my games, I like high adventure, a little bit of mystery, and a big thing I like to do is to set hints in the plot earlier on that are kind of concealed foreshadowing, that, you know, the characters look back once they get the big aha of the story and can look back and go, okay, I see where we may have been able to figure this out. So I like the players being able to look back and see points that have led up to where they're at. I kind of go through 5 points whenever I'm designing a game. The first one is my plot idea or concept, and this is where I get an idea or I steal one, and I try and get an overarching story out of it. Number two is the timeline, and this is very similar to what John said, how he does a timeline of if the main antagonist's plan goes unhindered, how things are going to turn out. And this, I try and provide opportunities in the story where the characters can throw a monkey wrench into this master plan. Step three is dialogue and description, and this is where I write out the detailed descriptions of the keynote places or dialogue of important NPCs or the main antagonist monologuing before they start a climactic battle. Number four is to hook the characters, and this is where I go into a little more detail about where the characters can jump into the story and try and use some of their character backgrounds to get them personally vested so that there's some individual connection per character to the story. And the last is to stat out all the encounters, and this is where you make all the monsters and the traps and you draw the maps up and where you kind of get the main kind of keynote encounters written up, whether they be political intrigue or combat. I want to thank you guys for doing the GM profile thing. This has been really fun to put together. Hope to see you guys at Fear the Con, and until then, see you on the forums.
You just heard Sam, who was the last of our profiles. So don't forget to go out to the show notes and follow the link so you can vote for who you want to be the winner. And thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you on the next show.